That's right. Broke it down in 2 minutes. Came down in 2 minutes. Sorry for the muscle tea. Well, not a lot of muscle, but good evening. Good evening. Good evening. So diving straight into it, freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. Don't forget, of course, call.freedomain.com. I'm telling you, man, the summer is when you want to get your philosophy chats in. Less waiting, more attention. And you also get to chat with me when I'm not burned out from five other call-in shows that day. So call.freedomain.com. I hope you will check it out. And I know people want me to talk about my fiance thinks you're an attractive man. It's not thinks. That is a downright metaphysical certainty. Ooh, don't look like Rollo Tomasi at the moment. The glasses, the hat, the muscle tee. There we go. Yeah, do it before the holiday rush. Yeah, for sure. And do it so in the summer, everyone's outside and getting vitamin D, so they're not as unhappy, which is good. You know, I got no problem with that. There's nothing wrong with that at all. But nonetheless, oh, to be disconnect and reconnecting. Reconnecting successful. All right, I suppose that's good. All right, so do you want to know? Yes, I think people do want to know about Jason Arday, a former, I guess, a former in the double sense now that he is both resigned or fired and dead, a former University of Cambridge professor was found dead today, yeah, August 14th, 2026, at the age of 41. He was discovered unresponsive at a property in Battersea, South London. The Metropolitan Police said the death is being treated as unexpected, but it is not believed to be suspicious. Officers are investigating and preparing a file for the coroner. Of course, we don't know for sure, but I would imagine suicide. So Arday had resigned on August the 5th, about a week earlier, as professor of sociology of education and fellow of Jesus College amid a high-profile plagiarism scandal. So, to be honest, it really wasn't just plagiarism. It was catastrophic, pathological lying. He was Cambridge's youngest ever black professor, appointed around 2022 to 2023. Well, we know. All right. Allegations centered on plagiarism in parts of his 2015 PhD thesis and other academic work, plus, questions about inconsistencies in his career claims, personal background, and medical history. He denied being a fraud and said that the intense public scrutiny and accusations had taken a severe toll. Cambridge had launched an investigation into the circumstances of his appointment. The university expressed deep sadness and offered sympathies to his family and friends. His memoir, Great and Unfortunate Things, detailing his experiences with autism, dyslexia, and overcoming early challenges, has recently been released in the U.S. He was a high-profile academic who frequently appeared in the media and was known for a personal story of overcoming significant early life challenges. I mean, some of this stuff was pretty wild. But let's talk about the plagiarism thing. I'll get to sort of the philosophy of it in a second here. So the plagiarism thing, his PhD thesis, critics, starting with a July 21st, 2026 Substack post by philosopher Nathan Kofnas, identified dozens of passengers. Later analysis claimed more than 100, and in some reports up to 188 sentences that were identical or highly similar to a 2009 dissertation by Paula Zwozdiak-Myers from Brunel University. Some comparisons noted retained copy editing errors and a possible rearranged/mistranscribed title. Statistical analysis of chance overlap were described as extremely low, 1 in 100 billion in one analysis. Accusations extended to published articles, including apparent recycling or interview quotes attributed to different participants, similarities to work by other researchers, e.g. epidemiologist Anjum Memon, and internal inconsistencies or impossible data in some studies. Two papers from 2018 and 2020 received corrections for omitted overlaps rather than retractions. Liverpool John Moores University investigated after complaints and concluded the issue stemmed from honest and reasonable error. Arday's PhD still stands. Cambridge initially referred complaints there and described some public criticism as a vile smear campaign. but later opened its own investigation into his qualifications and honorary appointments. Yeah. I mean, everyone's just so desperate, right, for this kind of stuff, for diversity and so on, that it's like the Elizabeth Holmes thing, right, with Theranos, right, this massive, massive multi-billion dollar fraud about magic blood vials, the magic blood vial reader that could do all of this amazing stuff just by scanning a tiny vial of blood and all of this sort of stuff. Like, none of it held any science, none of it made any sense, and none of the prominent people seemed to give a care at all about whether it was true or not. And because everyone's so desperate, like, look, there's a female Steve Jobs, and she dresses just like Steve Jobs, and she has a really deep voice, and I don't know, it's just everyone's so desperate to have their to have a counter stereotype, right? A counter stereotype. IQ and stereotype accuracy are the two most replicated findings in all of psychology and sociology. I'm not saying I wish it was true. I mean, I wish it wasn't true, but, you know, it'd be cool to be 20 again, but we have to, I don't know, deal with reality as a whole. So investigations by outlets, including The Telegraph, The Guardian, and The Times, raised additional concerns over Arday's public biography. Claims of holding visiting professorships and fellowships, e.g. at Ohio State University's Office of Diversity and Inclusion, University of Glasgow School of Education, that the institutions reportedly could not verify. Could not verify. That's a fascinating epistemological question. I mean, can you imagine when the media was gunning for me, if I had lied about getting a graduate degree from a top-tier university in the realm of the history of philosophy? They could not verify. You know, when you write a million-dollar check on a bank account that has 50 bucks in it, they just could not verify the amount. Just couldn't verify it. So he also claimed fundraising and athletic achievements. He said he raised £5 million for charity via extreme runs, such as 600 miles in 6 days or 30 marathons in 35 days. Yes. Jordan Peterson was awake for 30 days straight, and this guy ran 30 marathons in 35 days. Independently verifiable early records showed far smaller amounts, e.g. one Just Giving page raised about £6,000. £6,000, £5 million. Well, he was in education, sociology, and DEI departments, so may not be overly concerned with math excellence. Other personal claims, such as appearing in the Up documentaries, timeline issues given his birth year, or receiving a pig's head threat, no supporting evidence found in some probes. Arday acknowledged some early career errors, attributing them partly to inadequate supervision. Yes, I lied because I was inadequately supervised. His autism and learning disabilities. He consistently denied being a liar or academic fraud and framed much of the scrutiny as racially motivated or ableist. Don't you, I don't know, if you guys are younger, maybe you don't remember this, but when I was young, because pretty much everyone was white, there was like in my boarding school, there were like 500 kids and there was like one Indian guy. So you could call people jerks or a-holes or douchebags or whatever it is, and nobody could pull the race card. You could call someone an idiot or incompetent, and nobody could pull the race card. I mean, they were different times. They were different times. So concerns circulated privately among academics as early as 2023, public explosion in late July 2026, after this guy's post and subsequent media coverage. So Cambridge launched a formal investigation around August 5th, 2026. James Arday resigned the same day, citing the relentless accusations, speculations, and public commentary and the personal toll on himself and his family. He emphasized the resignation was not an admission of the narratives against him. His memoir, Great and Unfortunate Things, proceeded towards publication amid the controversy with some reported edits to certain claims. Yeah. So, And you can see this video, it's on X, of this liberal older white woman just, I mean, enveloping his hand as he strides up to her with this worship and this, oh, bleh. It's just terrible. It's just terrible. So Jason Arday's public narrative about his childhood centered on severe developmental challenges that made his later academic success appear extraordinary. Key claims, as he repeated in interviews, Cambridge announcement, and his memoir, included diagnosed at 3 with autism, global developmental delay, and in some accounts related conditions, nonverbal or effectively mute, until just before his 12th birthday when he miraculously spoke for the first time during speech therapy. He was unable to read or write until the age of 18, he was taught by a girlfriend. Doctors reportedly told his mother he was, and I quote, no better than a vegetable, or that, quote, there's no one in there. These details formed a core part of the inspirational overcoming adversity story that accompanied his rapid rise. Yeah. So nonverbal until the age of 11 or 12, well, some former schoolmates and a childhood neighbor disputed this. Jonathan Stewart, YouTuber in the year below our day at Heathbrook Primary School in Nine Elms, described him as a class clown who was always cracking jokes, put on accents, sang songs, including a 1990s advertisement jingle, and was a good mimic. I think I'm no speech pathologist or therapist, but I think I would put those in the category of verbal, in that we say that Robin Williams was verbal. Another former pupil and a neighbor said they remembered him speaking regularly as a child. Others supported Arday's account, saying they did not hear him speak until secondary school or recalled him being regularly removed for support. Arday denies the contradictory recollections and arranged supporting statements from two other school friends. How do you have school friends if you're not verbal? You know, maybe it's a different world out there. So in a 2022 talk, Arday stated he was part of the BBC's 7-Up series, the longitudinal documentary that began in 1964. So this is some, I read about this years ago. This is off the top of my head, so sorry if I get anything wrong. But it is that there's a documentary filmmaker who followed people from 7, 14, 21, 28, you know, 35, and 42, and like every 7 years, right? So, and would check in on them, right? So he was filmed, so the documentary began in 1964. He was filmed at ages 7 and 14 and pulled out at 14. This is chronologically impossible. Like Hillary Clinton with her NASA claims, Arday was born in 1985. The BBC confirmed he had no involvement. He later described it as an analogy or reference to a different community project with no independent evidence provided. Other early life details in his memoir and interviews. Specific recollections from ages where he claimed to be nonverbal, corporal punishment at school after it was banned in England, or precise medical phrasing have also been scrutinized for consistency or plausibility by journalists. So, of course, he's saying, look, I was nonverbal, I didn't speak, I couldn't read, and look at me becoming a professor, overcoming all of this adversity, and so on. Well, it's cruel. It's cruel. It's cruel. The idea that you can be like a vegetable and there's nobody in there and there's, boom, you can start speaking and boom, you can learn how to read because your girlfriend teaches you and boom, you can become a professor at Cambridge. And, you know, Cambridge is one of the oldest British institutions and so on, is really, really tough. So it's cruel. It's just cruel. It's cruel because to elevate someone like this into a very high status, and we don't live as yet in North Korea, and so the big lie is kind of impossible to maintain, to elevate someone like this to such a position of high status, to worship the ground they walk on, for them to be like, oh, you've disproved all of our cliches and so on, and to just have that kind of confirmation bias is incredibly cruel. Of course, it's cruel to him, and he may have paid for it with his life if he killed himself. And, you know, I personally don't have any sympathy for suicides. I think it's a terrible, cowardly, awful, destructive, and horrible way to deal with or escape or try to escape your problems. Well, I guess you do escape your problems, but you just dump 10 of your problems on everyone else's shoulders. I actually have a special kind of loathing for suicides. I mean, if for some reason you can't take living anymore, at least make it look like an accident so that your family doesn't have to deal with it. So it is not vetting people, not verifying their stories, and the absolute improbability of these stories. You know, the stuff that you really, really want to be true, that's what'll get you. That's what'll get you, man. The stuff that you are just desperate to be true. Again, I don't want to pat myself on the back too much, but I will say that a lot of the stuff that I got in trouble for publicly is stuff that I really didn't want to be true. Ethnicity and IQ, I didn't want that to be true. Single mother stuff, the perils and plagues and bad outcomes of single mother stuff, I didn't want that to be true. I didn't want voluntarism or a stateless society to be ideal, because it's a whole lot easier to work within the existing system of making a small government rather than advocating for and designing a stateless society. That's not fun. I sure as heck didn't want to focus on political power growing out of child abuse. I didn't want to focus on the gene wars, that political beliefs are significantly genetic and what we call politics is just gene wars by another name. I didn't want any of these things to be true. I really didn't. I would, like, for instance, I would love it if IQ was malleable. Like, that would be the greatest thing. But of course, they spend over $100 billion on Head Smart trying to get blacks and whites to end up with equivalent IQ scores. And despite some early gains, it all just washes out and becomes neutral and nobody knows how to budget. But I would love it. Can you imagine if IQ were malleable? That would be the greatest thing in philosophy, because if IQ were malleable, I would throw every resource I had into changing it and raising it. Now, of course, 80, 85%, there's still 15%, and that's kind of important. So it is better to be wise than brilliant. Wisdom can be transferred, raw horsepower can't. So it is really, really important to transfer wisdom, and that's what philosophy can do, but I'm not going to promise to change your eye color or your height or your genetics or anything like that. So all of the stuff that was, you know, severely controversial for me, for others, well, first of all, it was controversial for me, and I wish it wasn't true, but if wishes were horses, beggars would ride, and yet beggars do not ride. And so the stuff that you want to be true is the stuff that will really, really get you. I mean, I did the show on Wednesday about the miscarriage risk post-COVID vaccine, and I mean, I really, really hated the mandates and the Nuremberg Code cracking imposition of that therapeutic, and I had some sympathy for the number, but it just didn't pass the smell test, and in digging on it, it does not seem to be true. So you just have to grit your teeth, and, you know, if you think this applies to me, well, I guess it does, but where it really applies, my friend, is in your dating relationships. And, you know, you meet that girl, she's attractive, she's fun, she's maybe a little kooky, maybe a little bit of a nose ring, one or two tattoos, but nothing too bad. And you really, really want her to be the one. You really, really want her to be the answer. This is who I'm going to marry. This is who I'm going to be with. This is gonna... And you want it to be true. And you want it to be true because who doesn't enjoy taking their Richard for a shower, right? And so you want it to be true, but you really, 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 really got to be skeptical. It's the things that you are most desperate to be true that are the giant hooks by which you will be manipulated, pulled into a boat, thumped against the gunwale, and served up for dinner. Really, 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 one thing that I will tell you after a lifetime of battling error within myself and others, it's the stuff that you're most desperate to be true that will get you the worst. Because that desperation goes out into the world. Like, I'm so desperate for this to be true. And then you just get conned and you get ripped off and you get exploited and you get lied to because you're just, you really, really want things to be true. Just desperate for things to be true. I really want this relationship to work out. This is the one for me. All right. Sorry, let me get to your questions and comments. So yeah, people really wanted this this black guy to have overcome autism and run 30 marathons in 30 days and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, it's no good. It's no good. It's very cruel. It's cruel on the person who didn't get the job. It's cruel on, you know, it's cruel. I assume that Cambridge is very expensive. And it's cruel to promote someone like this. It's cruel for them because it builds them up and then absolutely rips them apart. And so you're exposing them to enemy fire. If you don't vet people, if you don't check their stories, if you don't just, you know, come on, this can't be true. Like this, everything that he said, like there's just no way. There's no way this guy went from his doctor saying he's a vegetable to suddenly speaking, to suddenly reading, to running 30 marathons, to raising £5 million to become, like this just, this is not how life is. I mean, that's like a superhero story. Unless he got bitten by a radioactive frickin' spider, he's not doing that stuff. And anyone who believes that. So think of the damage that all of this has done. Obviously, it could have cost this guy his life, although obviously he made the choice. But to promote, if he was a pathological liar, and it certainly seems to me like he was, we'll find out more over time, I'm sure. But if he was a pathological liar, promoting to a position of prominence is just going to have him torn apart. Because at some point, someone is going to start looking into this stuff. So you absolutely are pushing someone out into gunfire. And people who lie like that generally kind of have the mind of a child. I'm not talking about IQ. Maybe he was very smart. I don't know. But people who lie that brazenly, that repeatedly, that openly, and that unbelievably, it's a childish mindset. You know, you see you've seen these videos with the kid who's got chocolate all over his face, and he says, I didn't eat any chocolate. You know, it's just, that's a child's mentality where you just lie like that. And if you've ever been around pathological liars, they spin you right round, baby, right round. And you don't want to get involved in that quagmire of manipulation. And of course, underneath the pathological lying is immense rage, great fear of being exposed. And pathological liars get away with lying because they have a certain kind of threat. And of course, he lashed out. Some of his students who said he was not a great professor, he called them bigoted. Everyone who criticized him, he called them racist or ableist, or, you know, you hate successful autistic people. Like who would think that? Who would even, who wouldn't even cross anyone's mind to hate somebody who, if this story was true and he pulled himself or somehow genetically got pulled out of autism at the age of 12 and 18 and became a professor, I mean, everybody would be thrilled and happy and overjoyed, but the amount of harm. So it harms him, may have cost him his life. It harms the reputation of the college, which means that Cambridge University, it is now incontrovertible that it's run by mouth-breathing toad brains. The people who, they're not rigorous. They don't vet, they don't think, they're not skeptical, they're not rational, they're not curious, they don't have the basic common sense God gave a goose to not step in its own shite. And so what happens to the reputation of all the people who sacrificed massive amounts of money, time, and energy in order to get a degree from Cambridge, now that everyone knows that Cambridge is staffed by the most foolish, ideological people known to man, God, or devil? So it harms the reputation of the college, it harms all the people who've gone there, it harms him. It harmed the person who didn't get the job. It harms their own ideology. And it was mostly women who got him his job. So it does not do much for the reputation of women as critical, skeptical thinkers. All right. Stephbot needs a bigger data center. Yeah, you know there's a bunch of AIs around for donors, right? So if you subscribe at freedomain.locals.com, you can subscribe, which would be hugely appreciated, right? Because having a sort of base amount of money is very helpful for running the show. It's hard to plan otherwise. So you can do all of that. You look like the tax man. Ooh, looking healthy for your age, Molly. Well done. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Oh, the people who hired him, they don't have a lower IQ. They have a high IQ, just low wisdom. low wisdom, low skepticism. And they desperately wanted to be, see, and I don't know if this, maybe it's a bit more of a female thing, but, and I don't know, of course, the motivations of the people who hired him, so I can't say for sure, but if I had to guess, not that I have to guess, but if I choose to guess, I would say they want to be known as the people who hired the youngest black professor in the history of Cambridge. I got him that job. I found him. I vetted him. I gave him that. There's a certain amount of preening, you know, preening. And it's so funny to think that you're really high up in one of the oldest and most venerated educational institutions on the planet, and you still need brownie points? Blah! God, that's hideous. Can you imagine being in your 50s or your 60s, being at the top of your profession, and still needing court toadies to lick your high heels and say, oh, what a wonderful, oh, that's so progressive. Oh, you just, you've given him such an advantage. Oh, the youngest, oh, magnificent. Can you imagine? I can't imagine. Like, I mean, you know, we all like to be praised from time to time. I suppose that's nice. Although I suppose I've learned to live without it quite a bit, which, you know, giving me some freedom. But can you imagine being in your 50s and your 60s at the very top of your profession, lauded by everyone in society, chancellor of the hiring at Cambridge, blah, blah, top of your profession, and still needing validation from people who just think you're just so wonderful and woke and progressive and amazing. Oh, good for you. Oh, my God, you cannot be free if you need the approval of others. You can't even think if you need the approval of others. Another day in clown world. Well, at least clowns are entertaining, though, right? Cambridge is the problem here. Well, it's one of the problems, for sure. For sure. All right. Bum, bum. Bum, bum. Yeah, nonverbal. We're all nonverbal compared to Robin Williams. You know, it's funny because, oh, I remember a couple of times in theater school, I, for some reason, had this sort of possession and let rip and came up with like just amazing speeches and see, and I sometimes do it. I just, one of the reasons I have this goofy muscle tee on is I was doing some cardio and then I was answering an ex question about why I do what I do. And I just got possessed by emotion. And, you know, it's tough to do a show when your voice is thick with feeling. And so I didn't really have time to change. I was just sort of recovering from all of that and so on. So Stephen Poole. Yeah, do you know Hillary was named after the famous Hillary that climbed Mount Everest? That's right. That's right. Steph dressed like the leader of a street gang tonight. Well, it's nice that you put me in a leadership position. A lot of leaders in street gangs need their reading glasses. stolen valor of genuinely overcoming massive odds. Yeah, yeah, for sure. What are you weighing these days? I don't know. I sort of weigh myself once or twice a year. Like when I go for my checkup, I get weighed at the doctor. Last time I was weighed, I was 190. So I'm just a shade. I hate to say 5'11 because I'm closer to 6 foot, but it also sounds kind of goofy to say six. I'm 6 foot in the morning with good posture. So I'm 6 foot and 190. And most, I wouldn't say entirely solid muscle. It was a friend of mine's birthday last night and we all met up for dinner and one of his daughters is a cook and her baking literally is the closest that I come to believing in God. Oh my gosh. It's so good. I mean, I don't know if you guys have noticed this lately, but food kind of sucks these days. I was just talking about this with my wife the other day. Like we went out for a meal because we were tootling about somewhere and we went out for a meal. And afterwards we were like, well, that was bland. Well, that was boring. That was uninspired. That was just, I mean, it might as well be 87 grade fuel for an old pickup truck. Well, I guess it's given me some calories and that's it. It might as well have been beamed like toothpaste into my belly. It sucks. I cannot remember the last time I had a meal which was like, oh, so good. Like you put something in your mouth, like, oh, mouthwateringly good and so on. And I mean, I had COVID, but I didn't lose my sense of smell or taste. Although my daughter would argue that I, in the 80s, lost my taste when it comes to music. But that's a whole other discussion. So, yeah, restaurants, I'm not blaming restaurants. You know, they've had inflation. They've had to cut quality, I'm sure. But, yeah, meals, they bite. They're bad. They're no good. The only flavor they get is massive amounts of, you know, garlic aioli and fat and sort of all of that. So I miss when food was really good. Anyway, so this friend of mine's daughter, she assembles all of the known virtues in humankind, and even some we've never even thought of, mixes them together in a bowl, calls down an angel fart of pure manna sunshine, and puts it all together, and then you eat her food, and it's actually more of a possession than it is a taste. In other words, the food takes over your taste buds, swirls them, takes them on a foxtrot, gives them a gentle foot massage, and then punches them until they submit, and there's no safe word you can say. She made a blueberry with banana, and the icing was fantastic, and the cake was solid, and I don't have cake more than once or twice a year. Well, do I? I didn't until she became such a good baker. Now it happens a little bit more regularly, and I'm fairly decent at willpower with like not eating, but this stuff, like, it was just impossible. I lost my reason. My hands became like puppet master, sugar seeking hands, and I'd had a fairly mediocre meal. It was like a toasted cheese with some salad, so it was kind of a boring meal. And then she's like, "Oh, some cake! You'd bring out this cake," and the cake is so beautiful. It is actually like watching a serial killer disassemble a victim to watch that thing get cut. I thought it was going to bleed. I thought it was going to scream. I mean, somebody was screaming. I think it may have been me. It's hard to say. And the food was so good. And my wife does not like bananas in her food. So they cut off a piece. "Oh, I'll share it with my wife." And then I forgot. I didn't forget. I chose not to. I never forget. And it was just all there. And it was calling for me. And if I was Odysseus strapped to the mast, I would have broken free of my bonds and face planted in that absolutely glorious and delectable food. And she's going through culinary school, and I think that she should not open a place to serve her baked goods. She should open a church where they worship her baked goods, because it's not just baked goods, it's baked platonic goodness, like the ultimate sine qua non, the meridian, the perfection, the Everest of absolute virtue is all coalesced in her absolutely splendiferous food. And you just don't get that much good stuff anymore. You just don't. It's very sad. I don't even remember why I started, because now I'm drooling. I need to get one of those dental things that, you know, the dental things that slurp everything out of the back of your throat, but you try not to swallow so that they don't do something horrible with your gums. What the hell was I talking about for? Oh, yeah. So what do I weigh? Yeah. So I don't really weigh myself very often. If I had to go to a walking clinic or something for some stupid little thing, then I'll go in. The only scales that I trust, I don't trust any electronic scales. I think they're just full of complete nonsense and lies. But I will do one where you have to do the weights, right? Like you have to do the weights. I'll do those. So. Looking forward to watching your debate with Jay Dyer. I think it's going to be very interesting. So wordwardebate.com, they're going to run out of tickets very soon, which I'm very thrilled about. And I would like to really thank everyone who has bought tickets. I've sold more tickets than just about everybody else. And that's really thanks to you guys. And I will do a fantastic job. And I am very eager and thrilled to have this conversation. And so I really do appreciate it. Wordwardebate.com. Don't wait. 38 marathons in 38 days. Yeah, because, you know, 38 marathons in 38 days, fine. 39 would be nuts. Like 39, absolutely unbelievable. 38, no problem. I used to have that Rain Man memory before computers took over for me. Yeah, that's true. What is my daughter's phone number? It's under Izzy. All right. I remember you telling a caller that people who are suicidal have people around them who want them dead. Maybe that is why people who commit suicide do it in a way to harm the people in their life. Yeah, it could be. This was a psychologist, a psychiatrist from many years ago I read, who said, and this is just anecdotal, it's not like a big study thing, but he said that he's never had a suicidal patient who didn't have a murderous parent or a voice in their head from a parent for that. Oh, yes. Suicidal empathy, Gadsad named it. Yeah, I don't agree with Gadsad. It's not suicidal empathy. Because I haven't read his book, so forgive me if I'm completely wrong about this. But I don't think that he talks about the political power that is driving all of this sort of stuff. So. Stefan, looking good. This reminds me of the sad documentary on the girl in Texas who faked a pregnancy in order to be loved and paid massive attention to. I did see that documentary. I find pathological liars. Oh yeah, she faked a pregnancy and then, oh, that's a dark story, man. I was like, wow, this is kind of crazy. What a story. How's she going to deal with this? And I won't give you spoilers. And I was watching that documentary and I was like, wow, what a crazy story. How can she possibly keep this up? And then I'm like, oh my God, she did what? Anyway, so if you get a chance to watch the documentary, it's good. Now, I'm not sure why this me looking good reminds you of the girl in Texas who faked a pregnancy. I don't know why that hangs together, but I'm sure it does for you, and I'm not disagreeing, right? I'm sure they want to put all their money to hire good cooks instead of lining their pockets. No, well, remember, of course, a lot of people left the restaurant industry over COVID, right? Because restaurants were, I mean, certainly local restaurants were destroyed. COVID had a lot to do, the COVID lockdowns had a lot to do with preventing herd immunity, as Jeffrey Tucker's had a guess on to point out. But of course, small businesses vote conservative. Small businesses vote for the left because they're running their own businesses, and so they don't have the big connections that big corporations do and all of that. And so one of the reasons why the lockdowns hit small businesses the hardest is they wanted to punish people for voting conservative. And the best way to do that is to leave the big stores open and have the small businesses go under. So a lot of people left the restaurant industry, and maybe they've come back and maybe they haven't. So yeah, wordwardebate.com, promo code Stefan for 10% off. That's right. I'm a huge fan. I've been listening to you since I was 16. Well, thank you very much. What's your lifetime bench press personal best ever? I hate to say it. I've never tracked that kind of stuff. Obviously, I'm not like a big muscle guy, right? I mean, you know, I'm almost 60. It's not terrible, but I'm not a big muscle guy. And I've never been like, oh, my personal best. I go down 5 slots below the heavy ones on my little home gym. I got my home gym. I got it secondhand. I had one for a while. That was like this Gumby nightmare. I had a gym at home for a while that was Elastics. Have you ever tried one of those? They're horrible. Because you never feel satisfied. Because you never quite get it to where you need it. It just gets boing, 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 boing. I felt like a Gumby in a barrel rolling down a hill. And so it was like, can never quite get it right. And so anyway, I bought a, I was just walking in town with my daughter some years ago, and there was a garage sale. Now, I can never go to a garage sale with my wife because she finds the idea of having other people's old stuff to be vile beyond words and whatever. That's who she is. But my daughter likes them because she's a hunter-gatherer. She likes, like, we'll drive for 40 minutes to get free samples from someplace. You know, if there's someplace that, oh, there's a fair, I think they'll have free samples. Yes. So we burn up, you know, 100 times the price of the free samples in gas to drive there, but we're both hunter-gatherers, so we just enjoy getting free stuff. So I was at the gym, and she got a coin sorter, and I got this, I'm sorry, at the garage sale, and she got a coin sorter, which didn't last very long, and I got a gym, and it's kind of old, but it's got a lifetime warranty. And it's just absolute weights. And I, you know, if you've got it, it's just like not that big, it does legs, which is good. And so I've occasionally thought it would be kind of fun to film a workout. I mean, I don't know, would you guys be at all interested in that? I know Jared Taylor does that kind of stuff. I mean, do you really care if you watch me work out and so on? But when I was in university and I played Macbeth, I figured Macbeth was a, you know, big, strong warrior guy. So I really bulked up a little bit there, but I don't have any bench press personal best, if that makes any sense. What's the justification for the non-aggression principle? It is the only moral principle that can be universalized. So if you say everyone should both initiate and want the initiation of force against them, if you want the initiation of force against you, then it's not violence. Like if you want someone to hit you, if you say, hit me, I'll give you $50, hit me, right? Then you it's not the same as assault, right? If you go into a hockey arena or you go shopping in Milwaukee on Black Friday or you go to a boxing arena, then you're consenting in a sense to be assaulted. So the only logical consistent approach to aggression is the non-aggression principle, because if you say, then everyone should want to aggress and be aggressed against, because that's what universality means, right? But if you want to be aggressed against, it's not violence and it doesn't pass the coma test and other things like that. For more on that, you can go to my website, freedomain.com/books, and go to UPB, Universally Preferable Behavior. All right. If we blame our parents, could they not just do the same? And so on, infinitum. Sure. Yes. So I understand this is like turtles all the way up, so to speak. So to steel man your argument, if you say, well, my mother was mean, and that's her fault. And then she says, well, I'm mean because my mother was mean and it's her fault. And her mother says, well, my grandmother, my great-grandmother, but all the way back to, I don't know, Adam and Eve, after the fall. But it doesn't really work because I don't say I can be mean because my mother was mean. My mother was very mean, very violent, and very abusive. I don't say I can be mean because my mother was mean. I say I was hurt because my mother was mean. It doesn't give me justification to be mean to others. And because I say I was hurt as a child because my mother was violent, then I know what it is to be hurt when you're yelled at, screamed at, called names, beaten, thrown across the room, hit against a wall, and stuff like that. So because I know that it hurts, I then don't want to do it to others. So because I have empathy with how much it hurt me as a child, I don't want to do it, obviously, to my child or to other people. Whereas if you say, well, I get to be mean because my mother was mean, then you are to blame. Because there's nothing in being treated badly that automatically makes you mean. If your mother yells at you, that doesn't automatically mean you're going to yell at other people. If your mother hits you, doesn't, or your father hits you, doesn't mean you're automatically going to hit other people. There's nothing about that. It's not dominoes. We have free will. So that's the first argument. The second argument, of course, is that parents who are mean to their children by holding their children to very high moral standards. So if they say, don't do this, and you do that, and then they hit you, let's say you're five, and they say, don't eat any cookies before dinner, and then you go and have a couple of cookies before dinner, and you get caught, and you get spanked, then your parent is saying that you are responsible for doing the right thing when you're five. You're responsible for doing the right thing when you're five or six or four or 10 or whatever it is, right? And so that's very high moral standards. You have to do the right thing. And so that means that the parents have an infinitely higher responsibility to do the right thing. Because if you're saying to a five-year-old, you have to do the right thing, then you, of course, if you're 30 or 5 or 40 or 25, you have to do the right thing even more because you're the parent, you're in a position of power and authority, you're an adult, and so on. Now, if the parents say, well, I did the best I could with the knowledge I had, we don't compare them to their own parents. What we do is we compare them to the standards they inflicted upon their children. So if your mother says to you when you're your mother hit you or screamed at you or whatever, right? And you say that was wrong. She says, well, I did the best I could with the knowledge I had. Then the question is, when you as a child, say, studied for a test or didn't study for a test and then wrote a test and then you say you failed the test and you said, well, I did the best I could with the knowledge I had, your mother would say, well, you should have studied more. That's no excuse, right? Okay, so she's got a principle, right? We don't first and foremost judge people by abstract moral standards. We judge them by the standards they've inflicted, particularly on children. So if a child is punished because the child didn't study for a test or didn't study hard enough and failed the test or did badly, and the child doesn't get the excuse, which is perfectly rational, to say, well, when I wrote that test, I did the best I could with the knowledge I had. Well, that's a true statement, right? It's a true statement. So we don't judge people primarily or initially by abstract moral standards because they could say, I don't know those abstract moral standards. I didn't know spanking violated the non-aggression principle. And so, and they can say that and We can't prove it one way or the other. So what we do is we abstract the morals that people have inflicted on children and apply it to them. Because they can't say, well, that's not a standard that I have, or that's not a standard I'd heard of. Because if you punish a child for doing badly on a test, then you reject the argument that you cannot be punished or held accountable if you did the best you could with the knowledge you had. Because everyone who goes into a test in general does the best they could with the knowledge they had. Right? So a parent who punishes you for failing a test and would not accept as an excuse, well, I did the best I could, mom and dad, with the knowledge I had. They say, that's not enough. You should have studied more. Well, what's more important, a test when you're a kid or the actual use of violence when parenting little children? Of course, parenting is infinitely more important than some stupid spelling bee or math test or whatever when you're 6 or 10 or whatever. So what we look for is not inconsistency with abstract standards. What we look for is inconsistency with inflicted standards. That's important. So when I fought back against my mother, she was shocked and appalled that I would use any kind of violence or aggression. So violence and aggression is good when she does it, but it's bad when I do it. So then that's ridiculous, right? So if parents say, well, I did the best I could with the knowledge I had, well, did you let your children fail at anything, right? Did you let your children say, I forgot? Oh, I forgot I wasn't supposed to have any cookies before dinner. Ah, I'm sorry. Whoops, I forgot. You didn't forget. Whack, 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 right? So even if you claim to be doing the best you can with the knowledge you have and you say, I forgot, or maybe you legitimately did forget or whatever, right? So we don't hold people first and foremost accountable to abstract moral standards because they can easily claim they didn't understand those standards, they didn't have those standards, they maybe learned them later. But we can absolutely hold people morally accountable for the standards they inflict upon children. And if the parent says, I was mean because my mother was mean, then the question is, how did the parent deal with their child when the child was mean? Right? So let's say you've got a kid and he wants to get on the swing and he just pushes another kid off a swing. And then you go punish him and you yell at him and you hit him or whatever you do and you punish him, right? And you say, don't be mean, don't be mean. And then later they say, well, I was mean because my mother was mean. It's like, well, but you were mean and you punished me for being mean. So how can you as an adult say you're mean because of your mother when you punished me for being mean as a little child while you were actually being mean to me? You should have said, logically, to be consistent, well, I can't punish him because he's only mean because I'm mean, because I'm only mean because my mother was mean and I'm just paying it forward. But no, you inflict don't be mean on a child in a violent way, which is mean. And then when that child circles back as an adult and questions you, you say, oh, no, but it was just because my mother was mean. It's like, well, you were mean. You still punish me for the effects of your meanness. So I'm punishing you too. So hope that helps. Do-do-do. Depriving us of your leg shots. I have good legs. I have good getaway sticks. I have good gams. All right. Is it correct to say that lack of motivation to date mainly stems from unresolved parental issues? I don't know because the question is, why wouldn't you deal with those unresolved parental issues? I don't know, but my first thought, which certainly, of course, doesn't mean it's the right thought, but my first thought is that dating, asking girls out for boys, and dating is terrifying for women, and dating is terrifying for women in a different kind of way, because a lot of women, they're not going to ask a guy out, so they just have to be attractive and cross their fingers and hope that the right guy approaches them. It's kind of annoying for me. I can't imagine being in the dating world and having to be passive. Like, I would just go talk to girls, and some would say yes, some would say no, whatever it is, right? The ones who said no were fools, and the ones who said yes were wise. You know, it's a basic sorting mechanism. So, no, I'm not going to do that acronym with UPB. So, dating is scary, because you want to you want the top girl, and then you have to basically aim for the top girl, and then you go down until you get a girl who will go out with you, right? So that's dating. Dating is scary. Dating is scary. And there's a lot of people out there with very malevolent goals, particularly for the West. They want depopulation. They want the Western people to vanish over time and so on. And we've got like 2% of the world's population is young white women of childbearing age. So, you know, it's not ideal. And so there's people who will say, here's the reasons why you don't have to go and ask a girl out. It's men going their own way. It's Sandman. It's, you know, like girls are bad and they're all crazy and blah, 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 blah. And so there are people who will say that to you. And it's tempting. I mean, especially with this endless online nudity video entertainment stuff. So it's tempting. I'll do it when I've lost a little bit of weight. I'll do it when I've worked out a little bit more. I'll do it when I've got a better job. I'll do it. It's just a way of later, 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 right? And the purpose of the devil is not to tell you no, it's to tell you later. Later. What's the rush? What's the hurry? You got time. You got time. Focus on your career. Focus on making money. Become the best you. It'll work out. So the goal, if you say to people, especially men, if you say no, they'll say, oh yeah? Yes, right? So you get response, right? So the purpose of corrupting power is not to tell you no, it's just to get you to delay. Just to delay. It's not to get you to not run the race, it's just to get you to run the race badly so you'll lose. Run race slowly, right? So men find it frightening to talk to girls. And then there's people who are out there, like I remember having these debates on X where people would say, well, you know, you can go to jail for talking to a woman at Starbucks. It's like, no, you can't. No, you can't. I mean, I'm not dating. I'm happily married, but I still talk to people. And you could say, oh yeah, but you're an old guy. But I've been doing this for decades. Like I'll chat with the waitress. I'll chat with the girl behind the Starbucks counter. I'll make a joke or two. I always try to leave the person slightly better off than when I found them. That's sort of a big foundational ethic of mine. And usually it works, sometimes it doesn't, but I will generally try to leave people slightly better off than when I met them. You know, a joke, a laugh, a smile, a little bit of information, interesting fact, or something like that. And, you know, I do think that it works as a whole. So I talk to people a lot, and I've been doing it my whole life. And I've talked to, I mean, half the people I talk to are women in general, or maybe even more if it's like a waitress, because waitresses are often women. Or the people behind the counter, you know, how's your day going? Or I'll make a joke about something or whatever. And, you know, if I can get a smile and leave somebody with a smile. I mean, you have to interact anyway. Why not leave somebody better off? I want a coffee. They want my money. Why not give them a smile as well? Because also I remember what it's like being in the service industry, and having nice customers can make a real difference. So then people who will say, you know, if you talk to women, you go to jail. And of course, nobody really believes that, but it's an excuse, right? Maybe I'll just wait till the Me Too stuff calms down, or maybe I'll wait till, you know, I'll wait, right? And then, of course, in general, when you wait, your options get worse. Basic fact of dating. The longer you wait, the worse your options become. For obvious reasons, right? We don't need to, because the good stuff is taken first, right? The good people are taken first. And they're kept off the market, right? So my wife, I think, is a very high-quality woman. And as soon as I started dating her, within a couple of months, I proposed. And 11 months after meeting, we got married and, you know, locked her down, keep her happy, you know. And so she's not going to be back out on the market unless I get hit by some giant truck. So I think what keeps people from dating is the generalized fear and anxiety that coincides with what they're scared of, right? It's a really tough thing in the world, man. It's a really tough thing. When you're scared of something and somebody amplifies those fears, they're giving you kind of an excuse to not do it. You know, if you want to, you know, at the place I went for dinner last night where my friend's daughter bought her amazing food, there was like a comedy night, you know, like every, I can't remember what night of the week it was, right? And so if somebody has an interest in comedy, and I tried stand-up once, I thought it was interesting, but if somebody has an interest in comedy, then they should go and do it, right? But if people are like, oh, you know, you're not that funny, people will just laugh, they'll laugh at you but in the wrong way and this kind of stuff, and you just play out these disaster scenarios, then you say, well, you know, maybe I'll work on some better jokes and I'll do it in a week or two, and then you just kind of forget about it, and then your life just vanishes. You know, like we're all going into that train of death, you know, that tunnel of death. We're just trains going into the tunnel of death. I guess we come out of the tunnel of life, we go into the tunnel of death. And we come out of a hole and we get dropped in a hole. And that's it. We're just hole to hole. And so I think that one of the reasons men don't date is it's just difficult and unpleasant to date and it's tough and you can just say later. Are you from Canada? No, I am not from Canada. I was born in Ireland. I grew up in England. I spent some time in Africa and then Canada. All right. Not anymore, which is why women are complaining about men not approaching. It's not only fear of rejection, but now we have to deal with other life-ruining complications. Well, what can I tell you? I mean, you just choose your pain. Oh, it could be dangerous to talk to girls. It could be unpleasant to talk to girls. Sure. Yeah. She might be like, ew, like, what makes you think you have a chance? Gross. Yeah, it could be bad, right? It could be bad. Everyone who's a man who's had any ambition has had that one up, like, oh, why are you talking to me? You're not Brad Pitt, right? So yeah, it could be a little soul crushing. It could be unpleasant. Sure. And so what? So what's your option, right? What's your option, right? What is your option? Your option is to be generally sad and depressed because you don't have a woman at all. No wife, no support, no kids, no grandkids, a life of aging out and being isolated and being lonely and blah, 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 blah. Blah, that's no fun. It's just choose your pain. That's all life is. Choose your pain. I've chosen to spend tens of thousands of hours working out. Probably saved my life from cancer. So choose your pain. You can either be uncomfortable working out, like I did 40 minutes of a hard bike machine today, and it was a little gross. Be thankful that this is not me in your house, that just that there's no smell-o-vision coming forward here, right? So I did hard cardio. Yesterday, I did 45 minutes of hard weights, and I regularly get 10,000 steps because I like the walkie-talkies with my show. What did I do today? Let's verify that. What did I do today for steps? Boom, 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 boom. 9,000, 8,992. Yeah, and I'll probably do a little bit more. So, yeah. So choose your pain. So yes, talking to girls can be sad, it can make you unhappy, and so on, and it can ruin your vanity, it can, you know, but you have to find out what you're worth in the world, right? You have to find out what you're worth. So we say, well, I'm going to avoid talking to girls because it could be negative. It's like, okay, do you think then you've escaped the negative? Like this idea that you cannot do stuff and escape the consequences is kind of crazy. It's kind of crazy. All right. Hey, Steph. I'm a 19-year-old black South African woman who's listened since the age of 16. Your show helped me understand morality. I've just started university, and your show is helping me grow a backbone. Mwah! How beautiful. I love hearing that kind of stuff. Congratulations, and thank you for sharing. That is a beautiful thing, and I appreciate that communication. It's not the stuff that keeps me going. But it sure helps. The stuff that keeps me going is love of virtue and hatred of evil. But, right? All right. Let's see here. Yes, that plus 80% COVID vax miscarriage claim would scare a lot of men and women away from dating, as you pointed out. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You should work for the show. All right. A man rescues a woman from getting hit by a car. She then goes to sue him because he touched her a certain way that she didn't like. Luckily, the judge dropped it. That man is never saving another woman. Yeah, I get where you're coming from. But this is like, I don't need to work or save any money because somebody won the lottery. And it's like these extreme edge cases, you know, edge cases make for bad law. You cannot rationally run your life by some crazy woman who tried to sue a guy who saved her. That is so unbelievably rare. Now, what you can do with regards to dating is don't have sex with women unless you know them really well. 3-month rule is a good plan. Ideally, you should wait for marriage like I did, but just in case you just don't have my immense self-control. But I'm just kidding. But do not have sex with women you don't know very well, and women don't have sex with men you don't know very well. If you're like, oh my God, you know, this guy got accused of something terrible. It's like, well, did he know the woman enough to know whether she was stable or not? And if the woman says, here's to the SSRIs I sprinkle on my morning cornflakes, you might be like, I'm not going to use that line like, hey, how about breakfast? Shall I call you or nudge you? Right? You don't want to be doing that. So yeah, don't have sex with people. Don't get involved with people unless you know them really well. Don't have sex with people until you get a sense of their childhood, their family, their history, their parents, and all that kind of stuff. That's all. That's how it used to be, right? Girls like bald guys. Every girl I talk to from 2s to 10s have turned bright red when I approach them with full eye contact, bold tone of voice, and engages me in conversation. Well, okay. Maybe they turn bright red because you're a little imposing. I don't know. But why aren't you married then if you're very good at talking to women and picking women up? You know, the purpose of all of this is not just empty sex or notches in your lipstick case, says Pat Benatar, but it is in fact to get married and have children. So all these guys who are like, I'm great at talking to women, it's like, then why can't you choose one who's going to stay with you? Isn't Lauren Southern a man? No, although she did do a video where she claimed to change this sort of stuff. Anything else? All right. that's pretty good. All right. Anything else? More questions? Anything else? Yeah, I did a lot of research today, a lot of work. Did a show before this show. Worked out. And I could do a Let's Play tonight. I could. I haven't done any. My wife and I are half addicted to a word game that's a lot of fun. What's up, Steph? My nipples, it's cold down here. That's what's up, man. I got some diamond cutters. Could make myself a little snowman. All right. Well, I will stop here. No, sorry, Mike. I'll wait to call me on Sunday. We'll do Sunday morning, 10 a.m. Because I want to make sure that I'm fresh and I've been working so hard today. Oh, the life of a philosopher. Let me just tell you, nothing but back-breaking mental labor. Oh, I need to lie down and I need my little reason elves to help pummel my temples back into a state of semi-rationality. So, hey man, what would you say to someone 18 years old, about to start a career? Just make sure you provide maximum value. Think of it from your boss's standpoint. Figure out who you're supposed to provide value to. Maybe it's your boss, probably it's the customers in the long run. But the current plan is to come to Vegas in November. Yeah, so as a young worker, you figure out who's the people you need to apply value to, right? If you're a waiter, then, you know, it's happy customers and food and all of that. So skincare routine works too. Yes, I do have a skincare regime. I mean, really, it's just slop on at night, slop on in the morning. So sugar also ages skin. Why are we promoting marriage? Last time I checked, you aren't really religious. Why does the government have to be involved in my personal life? Well, the purpose of marriage is a stable pair bonding situation for the benefit of children. So that's what marriage is for and all of that. So I thank you guys for dropping by tonight. Really do appreciate it. Have yourself a glorious, lovely, wonderful, beautiful, tasty, scrumptious evening. We will talk to you Sunday at 10 a.m. and keep your eyes posted for a wee bit of Let's Play Soon. Yeah, fdpodcast.com/209. That's why I get married. Mwah. Lots of love, my friends. Bye.